Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! And it's Midnight Man! And it don't look good. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! Hell yeah, Ray Parker Jr., who I met at the premiere last night. Welcome to the About Last Night podcast. My name is Adam Ray. Ghostbusters, it's coming out this weekend, baby, July 15th. Went to the premiere last night. Movie is incredible. Duh. So good, man. Story's great. The four ladies in the leads crushed it. Everybody crushed it. The casting was great. Hemsworth was hilarious. cameos were great. I got some good FaceTime in my scene. The Slimer stuff was dope. Movie's great. Premiere was so fun, too. Got to see my buddy Beck Bennett. Of course, former guest of the ALN podcast. SNL cast member. And Trojan alum. You know, we went to college together. Last thing we did at SC, we're playing drunk Irish dads in a play, and then we were on the red carpet for the premiere. It was pretty rad. Met Dan Aykroyd for a minute. That was awesome. I was like, dude, huge fan. Best of John Belushi is one of the first things I ever saw, and you were a big part of that. And I was like, I was lead singer in the rock concert scene in Slimer. He's like, oh, great, great. Yeah, you're always great. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. How'd you like the movie? I was like, oh, it was great. He goes, it was great, right? So fun. I go, you going to the party? He goes, yeah, maybe. I go, okay, cool. I'll see you later. he was so cool. He was wearing his sunglasses outside. What a cool fucking guy. Yeah, it was great. Met Ray Parker Jr., who, of course, sang that original theme, and he said he'll come on the podcast, so that'll be cool. Party was great. It's just a great night, you know? It's at the Man's Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, which I've seen so many premieres at. It was cool to finally be at one, you know? And, of course, the man behind Ghostbusters, who rebooted the franchise, co-wrote it with Katie Dippold, who wrote The Heat, directed The Heat, directed Spy, directed Bridesmaids, and directed the Ghostbusters reboot. Talk about the one and only former ALN guest and now returning for a second appearance, Mr. Paul Feig, baby. Paul Feig, yeah, in the house. We went to Sony for this one and recorded Paul a few weeks before he had to turn in a final cut of the film. It was amazing. Paul is just such a great podcaster because he's just so articulate in the way he talks, so passionate about movie making and the projects he's involved with, and he gave us a real great insight, a very candid look into the making of this movie. You know, the pressures he faced in rebooting such a beloved franchise, working with the special effects. He'd never done a movie with this amount of effects before. You know, as soon as they wrapped in September, those guys started jamming on the effects all the way up until like a week before the movie, and it paid off because they're incredible. He also shares how I got the role of Slimer, his love for Legos, the cool toys that have come from this Ghostbusters experience, what he learned throughout the whole process. It's just a great conversation. Paul's the man. We had a lot of laughs in this one, and you know, it's great that he made time for us. With all the press he's been doing. So enjoy this episode with the one and only Paul Feig. And follow Paul on Twitter, at Paul Feig. Tweet at him. Let him know how much you love the movie. He's poured a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this one, and it's great. And he deserves all the success and credit in the world. Follow me on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad at Funny Brad. Follow the podcast, at ALN Podcast. At ALN Podcast on Instagram. I'm at Adam Ray 33. Brad is Brad Williams Comic. Go see Brad Williams on tour this weekend in Columbus, Ohio, July 14th through the 17th at the Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio. Get your tickets at funnybone.com. And then, of course, Brad will be in Montreal at the Montreal Comedy Festival, July 20th through the 30th. He's got a bunch of shows out there. Check your local listings. Go see Brad Williams in Montreal. I, of course, am in town for a while doing Mad TV. We're shooting. It's going. It's intense. It's hilarious. It's a lot of fun, a lot of work. We premiere July 26th on the CW, so set your DVRs now. July 26th, CW Mad TV, every Tuesday at 9 p.m. But I'm in town, AdamRayTV.com for all my local tour dates. Laugh Factory Improv Comedy Store, headlining the Hollywood Improv on July 30th. That's a Saturday night, 8 p.m. Get your tickets at AdamRayTV.com. Saturday, July 30th, Hollywood Improv. Come see me do an hour. Going to have Amir Kay on the show, Adam Devine. It's going to be a fun night. And, of course, AstoyMerchandise.com for all your Aylin merch. Hats, shirts, mugs, posters. Bring them to the shows. We'll sign them, take a picture, and help us support the pod. Of course, five-star ratings on iTunes and comments are encouraged. Go to iTunes right now before the episode begins. Type in about last night. Click the fifth star and leave a comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. And I think that's it. Now that we've got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's the merch info. That's the Mad TV info. Ghostbusters premieres this Saturday, July 15th. Go see the movie. Go support film, support comedy, and support the co-writer director of Ghostbusters. Returning to the About Last Night podcast for a brand new episode with the one and only Paul Feig.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it.
I'll be a Hollywood landmark, Paul.
Go see the Man's Chinese Theater. Yeah. Brad Williams' giant head.
Sure. on the billboard, I could just imagine the TMZ trucks just like, and on your right, we have the Brad Williams billboard. The second dwarf to appear on a billboard. Dinklage was obviously first. He was first to do everything. Yeah, no, but he's not funny. I mean, he had one line about his penis in Game of Thrones that got a mild laugh, there, but exactly nothing right. That can sustain
you throw
for
those
an hour.
Jokes away.
Oh yeah, those I'm are done. Exactly. Are you kidding me? A Middle Earth penis joke? I mean, I've got a whole 10 minutes on that. Yeah. Screw you, Dinklage.
He has a cunt. I love Peter Dinklage, by the way.
Yeah, yes. Let's just
endorsement.
Yeah, yeah. Let's put it out there. Put that out there. We love you, Dinklage. We want you on the podcast. We want to be friends with you. I want to be best man at your wedding. If you get married again, I don't know if you're married. If it happens, I want to be in your life is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, there
we
go.
We can start with Facebook. Paul, how long have you guys been here? We're at Sony right now. Thank you for letting us come here.
Please, yeah. Thanks for coming over here.
This is amazing. Are we in the soundstage that...
No, this okay. is a, just a it's a prop, a sound.
This is where they're right mixing now. Air Bud 15.
Yeah. If only. Why did I not get a call today?
I mean, you know, you have brought back several franchises, so whether it be the Peanuts or Ghostbusters, so I think we can do Air Bud.
I think Air Bud and Beethoven together again.
Oh my God!
With a sprinkle of Benji.
I mean, you say that, but now I really want to see that movie.
Yeah,
that would be like the Jetsons versus the Flintstones, and then
Beethoven versus Benji.
Yeah, all I need is the Air Bud haters to get on me. I can't upset anybody else on the internet. I keep my heart can't take it.
Wait, I mean, but why are you talking about the internet? The internet is a very civil place.
It is.
Everyone keeps their opinions cordial and polite.
It's very nice.
Yeah,
thought out and not at all preachy.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Never. No, I mean, hell, when it was put on the Denver Broncos Instagram that they were going to meet President Obama at the White House, you would not believe the nice comments that were right below saying nothing but good things about the leader of the free world.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
The internet's turned itself around.
Just so many nice things.
But no, so you guys have been here since the get-go, yeah?
Well, yeah. Well, we, you know, ever since December, we've been doing test screenings every, you know, month or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we always do like a big temp dub. When you do a smaller movie, you can kind of do a mix for a test screening on the Avid in your editing room.
Right.
When you do something big like this, you want to make sure it's got giant sound. So
yeah.
We've been here every month for like a week at a time, and now we've been camped out here for several weeks, and we're actually here for another week and a half, and then we finish the movie.
Wow. And you tweeted recently that after a successful test screening, you built some Lego.
Yes,
and
that was my gift to myself.
I saw that. And I was
Are you a
like,
big Lego guy?
Wait,
yeah,
that's incredible.
Oh yeah.
Wait, so Lego over Lincoln Log or?
Yeah. Come on, look at me. I look like a Lincoln Log guy.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not going to take offense to that because I am a Lincoln Log guy, and I do look like one. A guy who's because you know what that means? That means like I have the mental capacity to just stack blocks,
no.
but not actually read the instructions.
But you're a man of the earth because it's wood. Are they still wood?
Yeah.
I mean, don't try to act like you care about the Lincoln Log World.
I'm thinking old school. Yeah. Way.
All right, yeah. Save your tweets, Lincoln Loggers.
You know, in my day, we were so poor, you had to dry out cat turds.
Yeah. Wait, so what did you build then?
I ended up building the Parisian restaurant because I also have had the Slave One, you know, Boba Fett's ship. But I thought I actually want to save that for opening weekend.
there you go.
Towards that, exactly.
Wow. Yeah. See, like most, it's like some Hollywood people, they have like a chocolate cake. Yeah. Could be because they've been dieting. They're like, all right, as soon as I'm done with this, I'm messing you up. Yes. You have a stack of Lego.
I do, and they're my treat because they eat up so much time to build a full kit.
Yeah,
time I should be.
Been a lifelong thing for you?
When I was a kid, I was way into them, and then I got away from it for a long time. But then I just kind of got obsessed with the kits.
Yeah,
you know, I built models my entire childhood. I loved anything where there's instructions and you can make something.
Yeah. So you got laid a lot.
Oh yeah.
That's what you're trying to say is
model. The ladies are into model making. Forget about it.
And now I recently found out a fact that I had no idea about, and maybe you, as a lifelong Lego fanatic, you know this. I found out there's no plural for Lego. It's not Legos. It's never Legos.
Oh, see, I did not.
Unless it's that. Legos, my egos.
Yeah, unless it's multiple egos. Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know how you dissect that sentence, dangling waffle participle. But anyway, it's never plural. It's just like, yes, that's a box of Lego.
That seems
nice.
Wrong.
Well,
I do not cotton to this. Let's take this down.
Will you do Legos? Because I know you enjoyed the nice glass of wine. Will you do a Lego? Because to me that would seem like to have a nice glass and put it together. Do you have to be sober?
No, actually, sobriety is probably a hindrance when you're making.
Yeah, yeah. Your creativity is. Yeah.
But there is nothing sadder than the sight of a grown 53-year-old man sitting on the floor of his walk-in closet building Legos with a glass of wine sitting next to him.
Sadder, or
the cover of Vanity Fair?
Yeah, you say sad. I say the American dream. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
I mean, so it's like you go down to Legoland in San Diego and just be like, I'm home.
I know. No, I have not been there yet.
Oh, my God.
I think I would probably lose my mind.
That's got to be on the next, maybe post-Ghostbusters vacay.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if you could do a press tour, maybe. Mm-hmm. From Legoland,
maybe we go and we dress Brad up like a Lego.
That's an option. And I can just walk in and be like, lines?
Yeah.
I'm Mr. Lego.
Well, that's why we'd have you dress up so that we could get front of the line action.
We'll dress it like the Monopoly millionaire.
Ooh,
you should walk in with a top hat.
Monopoly. There are so many costumes I want to buy for Brad, and I don't know if that's weird.
No. I mean, and as long as we're going monocles, we can go the full monocle set. We can go Mr. Peanut. You know, we can just do that whole, you can just do the whole nine yards.
I mean, Brad is like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. A mini version would also be something I would be into.
I mean, you know, is there a sequel, son of Stay Puft Marshmallow Man?
Why not? There wasn't a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man until somebody wrote it, so there's no reason why that one can't happen.
So you said you're about a week away from
a week and a half from finishing our final mix,
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've never done a movie that's this effects driven, so we're still like effect shots will be coming in. Actually, I think a few will come in while I'm still when I'm off doing the international press tour.
That wow,
I'll be checking from distant lands.
I remember speaking to who's the man who's maybe the main effects guy. I can't remember.
Oh, Pete Travers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And talking to him when we were shooting in Boston, and he was just telling me about the ghost that was going to be attacking me and all that, and he was. I think, and I was like, how did you get into effects and what else have you done? He mentioned Lord of the Rings and Matrix and Guardians. And I was like, cool, anything good or anything like worth going to see?
I think so. Non art house films.
Yeah. And he mentioned how it was like a giant team and how they were going to be working up until the release. And I was just like, that's a world I can't wrap my brain around. And I don't know if you, this being your first movie to deal with it, was it all new for you too?
Yeah, it was a learning curve for me because. You know, I do. I'm a slave to test screenings.
Yeah,
what I love to do it is you know, we're all stand-ups.
Yeah,
that's how you know you work out your act. And so normally I can just show a movie and get a really good gauge. But this, we are having to show stuff with like previs, so it was like watching the audience was suddenly watching like a cartoon of what would be happening. And
now that tennis ball is a terrifying ghost.
Exactly.
So just picture that.
Yeah, just all green screens everywhere.
I mean,
it's amazing we got the good scores that we did because you go like, wow, people just don't quite as nobody can really quite know what they're watching, even though we had a big tutorial kind of thing at the beginning, said, like, if you see this, it's going to look like this, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But we did this last test screening like a week and a half ago in Arizona with most of the effects filled in, and just the scores went through the roof. And people
that's
crazy.
Fucking awesome.
But it's terrifying because it's like a game of chicken because you're like, release date's coming. I haven't seen a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hope it looks good.
Now, how do you calm yourself through that? You just have to go.
You just lose your mind.
Oh, okay, good.
I've been in a white hot panic for last year.
Well, because this is something that you, unlike your other movies where you're writing, producing, editing, directing, like you don't really have control over this. Like you can't get in there and say, like, you know what? I'm just going to do this part myself.
See, that's exactly it, and it's very weird. You really have to give yourself over. The good thing you realize is there's hugely talented people working on it, but you know, and they keep us updated on, we'll see iterations of it and you give notes, but it's still until it's done, it's not done, and it's just that terror.
And you can't,
if it comes in wrong and there's no time to change it.
Do you have to just I know you're a little bit of a perfectionist, so you want it to be right. Like you're like, I don't. There's no room for error. Like everything.
No, totally. It's just by looking at the stages they do and really kind of trying to micromanage that. But also at the same time, I mean, my father always put this in my head of like, you know, when anything in the world, hire people who are professionals at it, and then give them their space to do what they do. And
right.
Obviously, oversee and make sure, but still don't get in their way because it's very easy to micromanage that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want to because then they're bringing me stuff that's even cooler than I would have imagined.
Yeah. Do you have that style as you're directing the film? Did that come with you being an actor comedian to where like you kind of understood how they like to be directed?
Yeah. Oh no, totally. That's my whole job, is really to create a safe environment and figure out what works best for every actor, so that then I can get out of their way, because there's just nothing worse than a director, especially a writer-director, who just micromanages, like, say this word.
Yeah.
Then, you know, everybody's mouth works differently.
Well, that, and, I mean, that can also develop through, I mean, I've noticed that certain directors nowadays, they seem to have their crews, like, there's, like, the Apatow crew, there's definitely the Feed Camp, so when working with people multiple times, I imagine that trust just kind of builds up, and you go, you're a talented person, you'll do this.
Oh, totally. No, you just get the shorthand. It's like Adam, you know, I've got this role of a rock singer. It's like, come on, Adam, you go on.
Throw me upside down, have me a rock singer jumping around.
Just
like,
torture the shit out of you.
Yeah, yeah. But it was the best. But you know, and I will attest to this because, you know, that was, you know, the third movie you let me do with you. And there was even, I told my mom this as soon as I flew back and went through withdrawals. And I was just like, it was, all of them were so fun because you're making a movie and that's the best. But like there was just an extra level, from your end of just confidence as a director, where it was like, I mean, you know, you were owning every experience prior to that. But like there was, you know, you can tell you get better just with every time. So there was just an extra level of swagger, I'm just going to say, you owning the set and knowing.
It's such a put on, Adam.
I can tell you Justin completed a Lego set because you walked out with a lot of confidence.
Exactly. But it was for very young children. It was easy to put together.
But it was, but like, even like the trust and the comfort level on my end when you would come out and say, like when I got flipped upside down for that stunt, and you were like, I'm going to feed you some lines. But then you just go, and then anything you think of that's funny, say whatever.
Yeah.
And that was really cool, to hear you say to me, but also to not get thrown off by it, to just go like, cool, yeah, I will, because – and I trust myself to do that. But in the heat, it was like I was so nervous to – improvise, because I was like, if I say something that's not funny and Sandra Bullock gives me a disapproving look, combined with a Paul Feig disapproving look, they're gonna be like, maybe we should go get Mario Lopez.
What were we thinking? Why did we hire this guy?
Yeah, yeah.
They did have him on speed dial.
You're great, but I mean, that's why I love working. Once you find people that you love and trust, then it's just like, okay, great. You just know they're gonna come in and plus it up. And be money in the bank, as they call it.
Yeah, those. I mean, and getting to sing. I don't know if people. I mean, am I? Well, people have seen in the trailer, which is incredible, that shot of the concert.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was like, I mean, I just hope everyone can at some point in their life experience, I don't know how many thousands of extras were.
I think we had like 700 extras or something. It was crazy. That was
unbelievable energy, right? I mean,
oh my God. Well, they were the best. I mean, anybody listening to this who was in that crowd, total shout out to them. This was the greatest group of people. I mean, you get 700 extras, you just don't know what you're going to get.
Sure.
And everybody was so committed to it, and they looked great, and they were into it.
They wanted to be there. They loved the movie. They were just like,
totally.
You and the girls were so great because you'd come out and talked. I mean, it was like a really
encompassing like Make-A-Wish experience. Yeah. It was pretty great.
Well, when you, it's funny, when you shoot a scene with that many extras, is really not until you get back in the editing room, you start putting it together, then you start going like, oh no, look at that guy's looking at the camera. Oh no, that person's right. terrible. This has been one of these ones is like kind of everybody's great. I'm always looking like, going, oh, God, they're all really good. Like, I'm watching their acting.
Well, also, that's a testament to my performance, because people couldn't take their eyes off of me.
The fish smells good from the head down.
but that's totally true, where you see... And you see filmmakers talk about... I remember... This is just one story that's coming off the top of my head, where they talked about filming some of the scenes in Seabiscuit, where they had the entire... audience there that had to be there all day, being an entire audience and moving around, and how difficult it was for them to keep everyone, because a horse race is very passionate, just the same way a rock show is. They have to keep their energy up, because you can't have like 20 people jumping up and down, and then you have five just going just tweeting on the internet, well, this preview for this movie sucks. You can't have that.
It's a tough gig, man. Being a background artist, as we call them, not extras.
I like that.
But they really, I mean, it's thankless, because you just get herded in and out, like you say, you get moved around. It's like, okay, we need to fill in this part of the audience. Everybody get up, move your stuff over here. And we had a really tough day, one of the last days of our shoots out. We have this big Times Square set that we use, and we have a daytime thing towards the end. And we had all these guys dressed as National Guard and cops and full heavy gear. And it was one of the hottest days I've ever experienced outside. And these poor guys, I mean, they just had to be out there in the sun and felt terrible. But they pulled it together.
That's awesome. Did you feel like, I mean, the time I was there just felt like a very, and obviously I use a lot of your same crew and to shoot and just be a part of the whole thing. So that's the familiarity for you there is comfortable, right? How long of a shoot from?
It was like 75 day shoot, so it was over 3 months.
Wow.
Which is the longest shoot I've ever done. The longest shoot I did before that was probably 55 days.
And
so it's kind of a marathon run.
And the effects and everything, I mean, this was, with the effects element, did that make just like the prep and every day just that much more?
Yeah.
I guess I'm curious, like, going in, like, how much added pressure did you maybe put on yourself?
I'm definitely, you can't help it, especially with something that garnered this much attention before we even...
announced.
Oh, my God, I know. I mean, we were just, writing the script, and suddenly everybody was, focused on it.
Yeah.
You definitely bring a level of nervousness to it, but at the same time, you have to force yourself to not think about that, because then if you treat it any differently than anything else you do, you'll lose that energy of what makes your thing unique.
Right. And fun. You're where you are because you're good at this job. Yeah. There's a thing they see on the ESPN whenever like they have fans telling an NFL coach what to do. It's always, well, if you listen to the fans, pretty soon you'll be sitting with them.
Yeah. and that's the hard part about the internet, cuz I do love social media, and I'm a big Twitter addict and
you're great
all
on
that.
It.
You know, and I really tried hard, especially for the first year, even though a lot of angry tweets and things were coming in, I've always had this rule that I don't block people.
Wow,
but
good for you.
I know, but did you finally violate it? I finally have violated it. The last 3 months, it's the greatest feeling in the world.
Isn't it, though?
Who just is hammering me for a year and a half.
Yes. Yeah. I've just started blocking people over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And wow, is it a powerful thing?
It's just the greatest, because you go like, I believe it was the wisdom of Pitbull, believe it or not.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
that sentence has never been said before.
Somebody was,
Paul Feig and Pitbull, please get them together for some sort of chopped judge panel.
Yeah, here we go. Exactly. But he was on Howard Stern, and he was talking about why he's not on social media, and he was talking to somebody who was giving him a hard time about it. He said, look at you. He said, open your phone. Your phone is filled with negativities, filled with all this stuff. Obviously, tons of nice people
of course,
too, and you hate to miss that.
Yeah.
But it is this thing of, like, I can just be taken down by somebody who I would never normally have any exposure to.
Right.
I do like the idea that I can have exposure to everybody.
Yes.
But at the same time, some people just want to kind of hit you.
Yeah, and just as they, I guess, have the right to do that, you have the right to be like, I don't want that in my life. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to have to respond to that.
Yeah, totally. And that's when I finally went like, I do not. It just
good. You know, I'm glad you did that.
Well,
you can only take so much as a person, and it's like,
well, we're all comedy guys. We all are people pleasers. So like, you can get 100 nice tweets, and one guy takes a shot at you, and you're like, oh, and like obsess about it.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Well, I did. And this is what happened. This is how I got in trouble.
Yeah,
because I was really good all through production.
Yeah.
Just not engaging with any negativity and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we finished the movie, and I'm go to Italy with my wife to Capri, which is our favorite place in the world. The best.
Yeah.
And so there's this one restaurant that's up on the side of a cliff, overlooks the most beautiful view you've ever seen in your life. I'm up there with my wife. We're having the greatest time.
Shout out to Lori, the best.
Yeah, Lori's the greatest. And for some reason, she went to the restroom, and I go, like, I'll just check in on Twitter.
Yeah.
And this one guy who'd just been hammering me with all kinds of just insults for me, for the cast, just the worst. He and some one other of his little buddies were kind of going at me, and just I'd had some wine, and it was like, you know what? I'm just going to go. And I just went at him, just kind of like, you know, with a big fuck you.
Yeah.
yourself.
Yeah.
And it felt so good. And then over the course of like 8 hours, you're like, oh no, why did I do that?
Some website picks it up.
How dare you, sir? It's like,
and it's so stupid because it's like they look at you and go, like, you're up on this pedestal and like, you should have to act different. And it's like, no, like if I'm making myself, and it is great that you make yourself that available, because like that back and forth experience, and I see you favoriting tweets and retweeting, and when people have tweeted at me and included you, you'll respond to it, and it's like such a great interactive thing to do with so many of your fans. But at the same time, it's like you got to be allowed to also do. You're still a person.
No, totally.
Like it's, and then for them to chastise you and go, "Why would you say that to him? He was just trying to have a conversation about how he hates you."
Right. And then I go, like, "You know, sometimes I go, you're right. I should not have done that."
It's the fact that now you can do it anonymously.
Yeah.
These were not. You can do it anonymously, but then have the person still get it.
Yeah.
Whereas, but before, if Return of the Jedi came out and you and your friends watched it and didn't like it or whatever, as an example, you could talk and amongst yourselves and be like, "Hey, you know what? I liked Empire better. You know, they peaked, whatever." Mm. Now it's like it's not enough just to do that. Yeah. Now these people have to be like, Paul Feig has to know my opinion.
Right.
And then just angrily type and he's got to know my thoughts.
When I go into Beethoven chat rooms, I'm anonymous.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of angry shit to say.
You just unload.
I'm like, why wasn't Charles Grodin in the third one?
Yeah. I thought there was an American icon.
Everyone's complaining.
Yeah. I want to know, just speaking of geeking out, like what, when you started the process of making Ghostbusters, I remember when I showed up and saw Melissa in the outfit and then I think maybe I saw the car I think it was the emblem on the outfit. Mm. And like, I got chills seeing that. And that was incredible. So, I mean, I'm sure you had so many of those moments, but like early on, what was something, and now the car is on the Sony lot, right? I mean, that's
the Ecto-1's out there, the new Ecto-1.
It's incredible.
It was cool. I mean, I'm a big hardware geek, so that was one of the things I was excited about doing this project when it first, you know, was brought to me.
Can you talk about that too? How did that even,
Yeah, it was. I had been contacted a couple of times about, there were sequel scripts that were out there, and Ivan had called me about it, and Amy Pascal, very kind, but it just I couldn't kind of figure my way into it personally because
there had been rumors for almost 10 years,
even more than that,
about stuff in development, and I know there was like a fourth, like Ghostbusters with the original cast that was at set to go at one point, and then
there was even
pulled out, or like it was
they couldn't get Bill, and then Harold passed,
and so
you know, so there was these versions are floating around that were really well written, but it would just always, like, you know, a new team comes on and the former Ghostbusters kind of give them their equipment, and it's like I don't know if I wanted to just see a world in which a new team is just kind of given stuff,
right?
Versus it's been so long, it'd be kind of fun to see a whole new team and get a new origin story for it.
Yeah. So that's how you felt like you could connect yourself to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I know a lot of people, you know, people have issues with that, and and that's a valid point. You know, some people are just not happy it's a reboot, and I completely understand that. I just know it was brought to me. It was going to get made by somebody, and thought this is the way in. So it's the way in I took, and
they were all about it.
Accept it. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is when Amy was running the studio still, and when I said, well, if I could do it with all the funny women I know, because I know all these funny people. I said that I have some creativity for, and if we can reboot it and do it as an origin story, and she called me back immediately, said, like, let's do it.
I'm sure you had, ideas cast-wise right away, but I mean, is that something too where every movie, because you really make a list, right?
Yeah, you make
See
a list,
available.
But Katie and, you know, Katie Dippold, who I wrote the script with, and I both, since we're going to start it over again, we really wanted to figure out what would be the best characters for this. And so, weirdly, we didn't cast it in our head.
Gotcha.
Because we just wanted to go, like, what were the four different characters who could complement each other in here? Wrote it, and then once we had the first draft done, then I started, like, mixing and matching different, you know, I had my big list, and I had all these pictures. I never auditioned anybody for it. I had
a couple
of meetings. Yeah. Wow. I met with Kate McKinnon, but I knew her from before.
Really? Because I auditioned 54 times, and I told that was part of the process.
Just for fun. There wasn't any tape in the camera, Adam. I hate to tell you this.
Wait, now, is that normal for the writing process? Because I know usually, like, in the stuff I've written, having people in mind helps to maybe flesh out a character.
Yeah, normally I'll do that, okay. but it was just, weirdly, Katie and I both just kind of...
I like that.
Yeah, it helped, because then it took me like 2 months to really figure out who I wanted to put in it.
Yeah.
And it was, the biggest thing was just that I had to get four people with very different comedic energies.
Right.
And, but I know, I've done this long enough to kind of know who I think could mix and match well. And it's kind of dangerous to do it that way, but everybody's so professional that I hire that I sure would.
I mean, that, and you look at Bridesmaids, like how many characters was that everyone had their own personality, their own distinct characteristics and things that they brought to the storyline and the plot. So this isn't a new endeavor for you.
No. And that to me is the most fun part. I mean, they would say, you know, casting's like 90% of the job, and it really is. I mean, once you get the right cast, then it's just about me making sure I don't let them down and make sure that I film them correctly and put them at their best.
Yeah. Does Allison Jones, the great Allison Jones, does she step in and at least like, because I'm sure you know so many, but I'm sure just because your head is filled with so much stuff that there might be people that you just, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So does she kind of send you like, also like, hey, here's some people to think about?
Yeah, definitely. Well, definitely sometimes I'll just go like, I'm not sure, you know, give me some ideas for this.
Right.
But the good thing is now I've, you know, done enough and know so many good people that it's really fun to just go like, oh, you know what, let's just, you know, Jesse Henderson, my producing partner.
Oh, yeah.
I was always like, oh, you know who'd be fun to put in this role? And so that's really kind of fun.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
And you've gotten to the point now where now when you call someone, they don't go, who?
Like, oh, some do.
you don't have those moments anymore. Most time people are going to take your calls now.
It's really nice to be able to get people to do stuff.
The cast is insane. I mean, I have a, you know, printout of like my call sheet from that day, which is like just bonkers.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just heard and I know, and I don't know what we can speak to, but at least allude to the fact that the amount of cameos and just people, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, you know, the whole thing's about really establishing this new group and letting them shine. But since it's, you know, it's a remake or a reboot of something that came before, you also want to put Easter eggs and little gifts for people throughout. It just, you have to figure out where to put them, because if you put it too early, you don't allow the new cast to kind of get their stronghold.
Right.
What you want is the audience to get so into it, they kind of forget about everything else. And then it's like, oh, and here's a thing, and here's a thing. And so it's really fun, like in these test screenings, when our cameos and little moments like that do come up, people are like, oh,
dude, that's kind of
odd. Yeah. Oh, what a cool really moment. Fun. It's really fun.
Well, and hearing the music in the trailers, first of all, the one with the piano, and I think it was the first trailer that was released.
That slow piano.
Incredible.
Thing. Yeah, wasn't that great?
And then, was that Teddy?
No, that was actually let me just shout out to Teddy Shapiro.
Teddy Shapiro.
Doing the most amazing
killing
score for this movie you've ever heard in your life.
He's going to come on too.
Oh,
the podcast.
Teddy's the greatest.
The man.
The greatest.
Yeah.
But no, that was actually the one of the ad agencies that was kind of working on these trailers provided that music and that, you know, that more orchestral dun dun dun.
Yeah.
They came up with that, and I was just, first time we heard that, I cheered up, because it's just like, that's so awesome. I would never have thought to do that.
Oh, yeah. And one thing I love about the music and that I've heard so far in the previews is it's a little scarier. Like, there's a little hauntingness to it. It's not so much a, like the 80s synthesizers and kind of, like, there's definitely like a ghoulish factor of
We really wanted a big score for this and kind of a gothic feel to it, and Teddy embraced that. I mean, we've got everything on this soundtrack. He went to this church in downtown LA that has the second biggest pipe organ either in the US or in the world,
what,
and recorded that for some part of the score. We had a choir singing Latin. I mean, it's crazy. This score is bananas.
And was there an effort to make it? I heard you in one interview say that like you wanted to make this a little scarier.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely wanted to make it scary. You know, I mean, you know, as scary as the first one was, with maybe a little bit extra. I didn't want to make something that was so terrifying. You know,
sure,
you can scare.
Yeah, you want to make the ring with Melissa McCarthy exactly. where she's walking right. backwards or something right. like that. Not that thing.
But I just wanted to feel real. My comedy, I always just want it to feel real, you mm-hmm. know, even if it's in a, you know, an absurd world or something crazy. If people are treating it real and the things they're seeing feel real, but while still fun, it's a very interesting line to walk, because you want it to look fun and to be fun, but you just want it to have enough where you're kind of like, oh, you're a little nervous and, you know, occasionally make you jump if we can.
The ghosts in the previews look... I mean, like, facially, too. Like, it seems like there's personality to them.
Well, I mean, it was really important to me to do as much as I could practically. And so a lot of the ghosts are cast. They're actual actors who I've worked with before, who we put into these costumes. You know, the one who sprays Kristen with the ectoplasm.
Yeah.
That's Bess Rouse, who was one of the stars of my Yahoo show, Other Space.
No kidding?
Yeah, and so we put her in the full costume, full makeup, amazing. But then we put this, like, LED light suit on her, so there would be light interactivity with her and the walls and with the cast.
Right, and you see the light on Kristen's face and the other people's faces.
It just makes it more real. And then, and then we put her on a rig. We were hanging her from a wire, and at another point, we had her like on this kind of metal rig that goes up and down. The crew was floating up and down, and then we go in and we augment her with CG. But what happens is you get a performance, and then the actors act with her, and she actually was able to like scare the shit out of Kristen once by doing something early. And that's what I want, because I don't want them acting against tennis balls if I can avoid it.
Right, and then I mean, how far into the process do you go? I guess I got to cast the Slimer guy.
Well, I know. I had to dig deep for that.
Exactly. How dare you. I'm right here.
Well, let me just say, a certain young man sent a audition tape to me.
Did you watch that, yeah?
Yes. Yeah. Wearing a little Slimer. What was that, like a football that you cut the middle out of and then stuck on your head?
I take offense to that.
Please post that to your website. That's all
you need. Well, I think when the movie comes, maybe I should. I can post it now.
Slimer audition tape.
Well, I talked to somebody, I think it was the guy who's doing the DVD extra stuff at the shoot, and he was saying maybe like putting it on the DVD thing, but maybe I should just post it. I bought that Slimer mask. It was like... It looked like a cutout football. It was. I think I got it off Amazon. Shout out. And it was like, I was going to get a full body Slimer suit, but I couldn't find one that didn't look like a kid's costume.
Like a body condom.
Yeah. like that. That I was going to have trouble fitting into. And, and you know, I mean, I've been working on my calves, but I didn't want to, like, you know, bust out of that thing. So it was a half face. And yeah, it was, I guess what I needed to show, I just thought, I guess, like, you weren't thinking of me for it. It's out of sight, out of mind. And just like, you don't ask, you don't get, which my mom instilled. And the worst you were going to say was, no, I've already been thinking of this. But I just assumed like there was so much going on that that wasn't yet in your head.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me just maybe put it there.
It's perfect time.
And it was pretty silly, I guess. But the voice was good enough.
The voice of Slimer. So there you go.
That was incredible. Well, and that was such a surprise, because I went to go do ADR. And I thought I was doing it for my scene. And then I opened the binder and it said Slimer. And I'll be honest, I got a little hard.
Excellent. Very good. Yeah. I thought I felt a disturbance of the force in that room.
And you sent me a really nice email saying you just saw that mixed in, and it was...
Oh, it's great. Yeah. No, we're mixing it as we speak.
It's that was like an... the cartoon, like, it was like... I can't even explain to you how crazy that is for me to be doing that.
No,
because, I mean, Ecto Cooler. I mean, it was like...
And the fact that that's coming back,
Ecto Cooler's back. I got that back. I'm telling you.
Somebody
had tweeted me early on, like, bring it back. And I'm generationally, I wasn't...
Yeah. Sure.
Drinking that stuff when it was out, so I didn't really know about it.
Because you still have several of your internal organs intact.
Exactly.
So, I mean, no, it's the most nutritious drink.
How dare you? It's made from real fruit.
Yeah.
Citrus. But yeah, I got it. Some guy tweeted me early, I mean, before when we were writing the movie, about like, please bring this back. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So I just went to the studio and said, like, hey, we should bring that back. And they had to look into it. At one point, they didn't think they could do it, and then we just kind of...
Sure, because you guys make movies. You're not a beverage
company.
Yeah, we just
dove into it, and I go, we're not going to make money off it, but it was kind of like, this would be fun to bring it back, because when I would talk to people who, you know, like Jesse, you know, producing partner, she's 32, 33, and I said, like, did you drink Ecto Cooler? She's like, oh my God, it was the greatest thing ever. So
yeah,
like,
everyone did.
Bring that back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And
I want to know though, when you did get that, like straight up, like what did you? Because I mean, we didn't have any sort of dialogue until really it just happened. And I remember like checking in with your assistant Greg and Jesse and be like, do you know if he watched or whatever? And then so like I was just curious, like when you first got it, what did you kind of like? We just like, oh yeah, like why not?
Laugh. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's cool. Let me see what happens. Yeah, because I wasn't quite sure, you know, how Slimer was going to come out, what you're going to do with him and stuff. But yeah, the minute we started doing it, I think it was always in my head, like, oh, yeah, sure, Adam will be Slimer. I just didn't want to tell you because in case I changed my mind.
Right? Sorry, we got Daniel Day-Lewis. He actually does a great
Daniel Day-Lewis.
But he's doing it as himself.
Right. Well, the worst part is he never broke character. So so he was Slimer for 2 weeks. Just never stopped.
That's why he's the best.
Is this, this is your first, I don't want to say, is it safe to say blockbuster? Like, oh, where
let's
like,
hope it's a blockbuster.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, my first like tentpole movie,
right?
Yeah, and this kind of budget,
like, yeah. And when you talk about Ecto Cooler, and like, there's also things to where there's going to be merchandise from this movie.
Yeah,
it like, do you have any input with that? Like, in terms
I was
of
way into that. I was really
like
pushing hard for them to do merch for this because there was reluctance at first. I think. I mean, you know, it's we're still in a world in which if you have, you know, four women starring in a movie, people get weird.
Yeah.
But they very quickly embraced it. But it just took a little staying on them and pushing to do it. You know, quite frankly, I wish there was a lot more stuff because we invented a lot of new kind of weapons and other cool things in the movie that I think they should.
Oh, kids will freak out for that stuff. I mean, I had everything growing up.
Yeah,
every proton pack.
Yeah, the toy I remember most of all my Christmases was the Ghostbusters Firehouse.
Oh, yeah.
And I had that, too.
Yeah.
I had my Ninja Turtles play in the Ghostbusters Firehouse. So
don't cross the streams. How dare you
put
the turtles inside the firehouse?
Well, that's Ghostbusters 9.
That's an unholy cross-pollinating. There is a Lego Ghostbusters Firehouse, though.
Oh, my God.
It's over 7,000 pieces. I actually made it.
So, what?
Yeah.
Do you have a picture of it?
Oh, I think I might in my phone.
We got to see that at some point.
Oh, yeah. But amazing. On one side, I put the windows in wrong. So it's got my own unique personality.
Wait, so yeah, because I remember when I saw you in New York at the when Melissa was hosting SNL, and you told me the next day, I think you were going to, was it Hasbro?
We were going to the Toy Fair.
Yeah, show or create, or I guess you were working on some of
it. Well, yeah, I mean, because Lego is putting out our Ecto-1 with our cast. Yeah, it's so exciting. So I went there to kind of visit them and then look around at some other stuff. And I love toys and collectibles and all
and
that stuff.
It's also such a big part of the, it enhances the, the geek culture, but just like I mean, it's why McDonald's like crushed it for so long with, I remember like growing up in the movies and where they would have a tiny little toy just from the movie was like a huge deal.
Oh, totally.
And I completely forgot about, you know, the diabetes I was going to be getting from the burger because I got this tiny little gray toy.
Right. You wash it down with your Ecto Cooler.
But it's I mean,
no, it's really fun. And you know, also it's fine. I mean, I've collected so much stuff. I still have unopened Spawn.
Do you really?
Figurines up in my attic. But
amazing.
Now it's kind of like I always force myself just to open things up because you go, you know, you can collect, but also that stuff's worth a lot because back in the day of Star Wars figurines, nobody thought they were collected, so they all tore it open.
Right.
So to have ones that aren't open, that's a big deal because they don't exist. Now everybody, nobody takes anything out of their packages.
Everyone buys two of everything. One stay in the package, and then one that you play with or whatever. Then that brings the value down because now everyone has one.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's great to you know keep it collectible. I just it was really fun for me when the Ghostbusters figures came in.
Yeah,
just open them up and take them out and like have them out. It's kind of cool if you've been into like collectibles and merchandise your whole life to have anything you're associated with actually have its own thing was pretty cool.
Now is that stuff already all available or will become?
Yeah, it is. It's out in stores. Yeah, I saw it in Toys R Us the other day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's not a ton of it, but it's out there.
We got to get a Paul Feig toy soon.
Well, okay, with I can actually
detachable suits.
Yeah, exactly. I can announce now.
What?
This is an exclusive.
Oh my God!
Funko has made a Paul Feig figure.
Shut.
That will be available. Online only, because online I don't only. Think they want to make that many.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Wow.
Congratulations. Very, very
thank you. So, I mean, I was thrilled because I'm a huge Funko fan.
Instead of like Kung Fu Grip, does it have like clip-on tie or like different?
I'm leaning on an umbrella. It's very classy.
Oh, that is insane.
It's wild, right? Although it took Funko to make me realize my hair is gray. Because they sent me the thing. I go like, no, my hair's brown. The hair's gray. And they're like, no. It's like, oh, you're right. Okay.
Well,
no,
there
you're
is,
rocking it.
Yeah, like it. There is that moment like when you sit down at a carnival to have the caricature artist draw you. And you're like, my forehead isn't that big. Yeah, they're like,
how dare you?
Well, I got news for you.
That's right, really. I don't fly that tiny airplane.
No, that's not me. Well, congrats. That's a huge moment.
I was very, very thrilled with that. And apparently in the Lego Dimensions, mm-hmm. There's going to be a Lego me somewhere on some level, some lower, unfun level of the Lego Dimensions.
No way, but you'll be a Lego.
That's right. And so you can beat me up, I guess.
Never.
That's amazing.
I don't even know how to frame this question, so I'll just kind of come out.
Oh, by the way,
just dive in, Brad. Just dive in.
By the way, we're at 150. Could you do another 20 minutes?
Yeah.
210?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I love it. Thank you.
Do you, with your stuff that you've done now with Bridesmaids and now with Ghostbusters, do you consider yourself a feminist?
Well, you know, I find it kind of obnoxious when guys call themselves feminists.
Right.
I don't know, for some reason, I don't know why. I'm a huge supporter of women, and I want total equality for women, and I'm driven by the idea, you know, the dislike of how women have been portrayed in the media for so
long.
Sure.
I mean, and Sarah Silverman complained about it forever, where it's like she was the funniest one on set and she was always the snarky friend.
Oh, God, totally. I mean, look, School of Rock, one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
But, like, remember the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, there's Sarah. This is going to be so funny. It's like, oh, my God, she's being so mean. Like, why is Sarah not being funny?
Yeah.
And then it just kind of was that slow attrition of that, of, you know, seeing The Hangover, another brilliant movie. But there's Rachel Hare is one of the funniest people I know.
So good.
She's just mean. And it's like, well, this isn't fair. Because also, my problem is then it all eats itself, because guys see these movies where these roles for women are written where they're just a drag, and so they go, oh, I want to see a movie starring women because they're just going to be all like that. It's like,
right.
Well, no, that's because somebody wrote her to be like that. She's not like that. If you give her a great role and the other funny women, then you would go in and you go like, oh, my God, that's so funny. I mean, that's why it was really fun that guys who went to see Bridesmaids liked it so much.
I saw it 5 times in the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, it was like, and it's so crazy that
you bought Paul a new pocket square.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to blow my nose in it.
Yeah, you're welcome. But to even have to change kind of like that perspective for people to like
it's
go,
hard.
Oh, wait, though, because I remember seeing it like, you know, being just so like, what an amazing comedy, but then also like recognizing that like, trying to think, like, when have I seen a big cast of, like, a woman comedy, like, where it's dominated by female, you know?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it until the end of the movie, where I kind of walked out and was like, who was the male? John Hamm? But right. Not really?
Exactly.
Was it Ben Falcone, yeah?
Yeah, and I just kind of walked out going, and how great.
Yeah.
Is that?
I mean, that's the only point I want to get to, where, you know, even the fact that we're always called the all-female Ghostbusters, you know, they don't call something the all-male.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Whatever, name the movie. And it's just, we still hang up on it, and it's, and I get it. It's just coming out of sort of the primordial ooze here, but we should be out of it by now.
I think
you,
so.
You would hope so. And, I mean, it's still amazing to me when you see things like, I know in the comics, Thor is now a woman.
Yeah.
And some people just were up in arms about that, just like, well, Thor's a dude.
Yeah.
No, Thor's a fictional character.
Yeah.
Like, Thor is not real.
Wait,
you
what?
Can do... Exactly. Hey, sorry, Adam. Sorry
no,
to bring this
no,
to you.
Oh.
But like,
why'd you have to hear it here?
Yeah.
But Air Bud really plays football, right?
That is true. That is true.
Okay, good.
But like, these things aren't concrete. You're not taking the Washington Monument and saying, like, we're going to paint it neon orange. Like, you're not doing that. And just because you change Thor, or just because you change the gender of the cast of Ghostbusters, does not mean the original does not exist. It's still there.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. It's just hard for me to kind of take seriously, is the whole thanks for ruining my childhood thing, which will be written on my tombstone, I guarantee you. But it's kind of like, God, you know, I've seen so many different quotes that are funny about that, like ranging from, you know, sort of like, if it takes this to ruin your childhood, then you've had a pretty good life.
Yeah.
You know, but it is that kind of, but that's my thing, too, is like, it exists. Honestly, it's one of the reasons why I was almost kind of nervous to do like a straight sequel, because I feel that almost can pollute the stream more than like, oh, here's another thing over here.
1,000%.
This is its own thing, and your thing's over there.
Yep.
And, you know.
Yeah, it's its own separate entity that you could enjoy separately, and it doesn't erase the memory of if anything, this new Ghostbusters film will make people watch the new film and then also go back and watch the old film and probably appreciate that more.
That's my hope, too. You know, and honestly, you know, you get so kind of buried under the angry guys that are writing you constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And but then, you know, I'll get pictures. You know, we were in production. Like, there's this one family of the De Silvas, I think they are. And suddenly there was this picture got posted of their daughter wearing they made the costume with the orange stripes, and her dad made her a replica of the proton pack that we have in the movie. And she just had this look on her face. She was tough and like confident posing. And I burst into tears because it's kind of like I've been attacked for so long. And you go like, this is why we're doing this.
Yeah, right.
To give these kids a new generation of, you know.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because no one has the action figure of Sarah Silverman from School of Rock. Like, exactly. no girl looks at that woman and goes like, yes, that embodies everything that I am.
And I want kids, you know, boys and girls to watch this and go like, oh my God, they're so funny and they're so cool and they're tough and they're fighting and they're, you know.
That's going to happen. And I'm glad that that's not lost on you to recognize that, like, you are doing that for this movie. I mean, for all the comedic and cultural and just like amazingness that it's going to like bring and people are pumped for, like, there is that deeper level of like, man, there's going to be like kids that get like film and TV does impact you, and you're going to get kids that are inspired and like, you know, like things like that picture or just seeing the toughness of girls in that role is going to like.
Yeah. You know, the great thing is, you know, the generations coming up aren't hung up on this stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Like the under 25s. Yeah. You know, kind of like, that's cool. Like, they don't have that hang up. And so, you know, you're getting hit, you know, in general, getting hit by so many guys in their 30s and 40s. And it's like, dudes, I get it. I know that this is, you know, it's the sacred ground, and I get that. But at the same time, don't pull all your toys in and hang on to them. Like, share them with, you know, share them with younger kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the trend is actually expanding. I mean, on Twitter a few days ago, someone made a mock up movie poster of Gillian Anderson playing Jane Bond, not James Bond, but Jane Bond, and it was trending.
Really?
Yeah. And people started talking like, yeah, Gillian Anderson is Jane Bond.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Totally.
Like, and if that movie's made, it doesn't mean, like I said before, it doesn't mean James Bond movies don't exist.
Yeah.
It just means, hey, here's a female that can kick ass and who's a spy.
And that's the thing. We should just get to the point where you're like, it's all based on merit. So you go like, oh, that person's great. That person's great. It's not like, oh, there's a woman in this part.
Right.
You know, that's what we got to push past. But it's going to take a while.
You know? Speaking of poster, has that been like the Heat poster, which is still hanging in my apartment?
It is
like one of the dopest posters of all time.
Well, the one that we had, that was the dude designs.
Yeah.
What is it? It's the Mondo poster.
Yeah. I mean,
those are the greatest.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
There's been posters, I think, in theaters.
They're still fine tuning what the kind of the main poster is going to be.
Yeah.
It's stuff, all this stuff like posters and trailers, they're so hard to do because, you know, you're trying to crystallize something out of context. I mean, a poster is whatever, you know, you just want it to be graphically dynamic and interesting. But like trailers, you know, are all my movies have always had a hard time with trailers because it's just, you know, here's the challenge as a comedy filmmaker.
Sure.
This is what, let's say here's two scenarios for you. One scenario is you are in a restaurant at a table with, you know, let's say six of your friends. You've known each other forever. You guys are laughing. You're having the greatest time. You're just cracking each other up. And you know, telling stories, you know, Brad's telling a story, and you go, oh my God, so funny because Brad doesn't normally do that, and he did this, and you're laughing, 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 have the greatest time. And it's the greatest night of your life. scenario number two, you are eating by yourself at a table next to that table. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there, they're laughing, they're loud and all this stuff. And you're going like, shut the fuck up. I hate you people. You're not funny.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't have any investment in those people.
Yeah.
You don't know why what they're saying.
And you're
is
jealous
funny.
Of the good time.
Yeah, totally. That and also just like you have no context.
Yeah.
It's like a bunch of people telling stories that don't sound funny.
You heard, right. blah, 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 and then Brad reached for the top shelf.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, well, like, who cares, Brad?
Yeah, yeah.
But,
shut up.
Yeah.
So our goal as a film, you know, I have to within as fast as I can, 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, make you sit you at that table and make you know the stories of all those people. So then you go like, oh my God, it's so funny he said that. It's so funny he said that.
Oh my God.
And so when you're trying to do a trailer, all you can really do or all the studio can do is go, oh, well, these are the jokes that killed in the test screening. Mm-hmm. Let's grab those jokes. Well, those jokes are only killing the test screening because you had a whole context of
right.
movie before that
oh my
leading
God.
Up to that point.
Right. It's all in as like for drama and for like a superhero movie, I get the show big explosions, yeah. whatever, like great. Yeah. Now that's your trailer. But for comedy especially,
it's tough. Look, and there's been plenty of great comedy trailers.
Yeah.
So it's not like it doesn't work for everybody. It's just my style of comedy is so behavioral that, you know, it's hard to pluck those things out.
And how do you not and then you put You don't want to put all your best jokes in the trailer.
Well, I always deputize the studio. From day one when we start shooting, I send them every frame of anything I've shot, every take. And I want them to find jokes because you can invent trailer jokes that I won't even put in the movie because they only work in the context of a trailer.
Yeah.
Because they're usually juxtaposition jokes.
Right,
right.
Where you take one thing and then like, he says something and then cut to what? You know, or whatever it is. And
right,
then you're like,
right,
oh, that's funny because they're commenting.
Yeah, you
that.
Just do something where it's like, are you kidding me? Female Ghostbusters, that would never work. Cut to them all in the car or something like that.
Yeah, totally. So that, and also I don't like to burn off all our jokes in the trailer.
Yeah,
so I'm
no.
saying like, guys, please. But then a lot of times they'll cut trailers while we're still doing the movie and you go like, that's a hilarious joke that you found that I didn't even think about. And then we'll go, okay, I'm stealing that. I'm going to put that
No in. Way that happens, huh?
Yeah, totally. I have no problem with any kind of collaboration. I don't care where something funny comes from. As long as it goes into the final product or makes the final product look good, that's mm-hmm. all you should care about.
That's why it is great that you do those test screenings. I remember you tell me, you were like, just because this is a giant franchise and like I can't change the way I do with Bridesmaids, Heat, Spy, like you, this is how you find the best stuff. Like, and Ghostbusters is still a comedy. You want to have the best.
You know, and the studio was very nervous about it.
Yeah.
Rightly, they would be because you're taking a giant property, you know. And I'm just, you know, I'm only a few months into the editing. Because when I do my first test screening, it's like, I don't know. I think this works. Let's just put it up so I can find out what works and what doesn't. And I'm not in love with everything. Mm-hmm. But they were very nervous about it. And then once they gave into it, now they're obsessed with it. To the point it's like, all right, guys, we're good.
Yeah.
You said Arizona was the last one you just.
Yeah, we did it in Peoria, Arizona.
Nice.
Did a double screening, two different audiences side by side, and just scored through the roof.
How is that to from the first screening to now? I mean, is there like just a more relaxed Paul in the room watching?
No, you get more and more tense as you go along. It's really nerve wracking. But the minute you're in there, you have to. You guys do stand up, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know right away if you've got a great audience or a cautious audience or a weird audience.
Sure.
And so it's always like we always had like one joke right up front, and it's like, okay, let's see if that kills or not. You know, like in Spy, it was always when Jude sneezes and shoots the guy.
Yeah.
If it got a giant roar, we're like, great.
We got
a great audience. Sometimes they'd be like, ah, and you're like, ooh, they're going to make us work for this.
Yeah,
Tough crowd.
I mean, how much when you see those test screenings and you see them just go out, like, test through the roof and people coming out of it saying like, oh my God, and with a film that's not even complete yet, coming out having huge smiles on their faces, like, how much are you just trying to go through Twitter, then be like, okay, troll. See, look, we're just talking to
people. I know,
like,
you so want to.
Movie.
Well, the funny thing is, everybody who comes, they really put security, they do these, you know, make them sign non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah,
they
literally take
everybody's picture, they get all their info, and then they announce at the beginning, like, you know, you are not allowed to tell anything. But then when it goes really well, I always want to kind of, I'd like to go up and go, but if you really like it, you can tell people. But I don't.
You go out there and just sort of spread the good word.
Yeah,
if you're in line at a Quiznos and you're, you know,
that's right.
just whisper in somebody's ear.
About by the Ralphs, and someone says, like, oh, Ecto Cooler, they brought that back. Funny you mentioned.
Speaking of Ecto Cooler.
Yeah, go off. Right. Yeah. Go nuts.
Well, the funny thing with a movie or anything is, like, there's always going to be people that don't like it.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, as I almost hate to kind of, you know, even talk about, like, great test screenings, but for me, it's just kind of like, it's just that relief of, like, okay, good. I know with the majority of the audience, it's going to work.
Yeah.
That's really all you care about.
And I mean, the fascinating thing with me is you have Heat, Bridesmaids, Spy, like three movies that were great successes with critics and audiences, and then you say, all right, now I'm going to do Ghostbusters, and some people go, well, that's never going to work. It's like, well, no, it's like, well, he just did all that.
I know. Kind of give me the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
At least wait.
It's like when the New England Patriots say, like, well, we're going to bring in this player. Everyone goes, that's a horrible decision. You're like, track record.
Yeah.
They've done it. They haven't earned your trust yet.
Yeah, but it's lit, you know.
That's fascinating for me.
The internet and everything is like littered with the history of, like, how dare you, how dare you? And then it comes out and everybody loves it. Maybe even Diary of a Vampire? What was it? It was the Anne Rice one where Tom Cruise was going to be.
Oh, yeah. Interview with a Vampire.
Was, I mean, if you remember the run-up to that, I'm older than you guys. Mm-hmm. It was just like, oh, my God. And even Anne Rice was coming out. How dare you cast Tom Cruise? And everyone was so up in arms. And the minute it came out, he goes, oh, he's great. And it's gone.
And then they absolutely forget.
Yeah.
And then they absolutely forget that they ever said anything mean or anything bad. They just go, oh, wow, it's a great movie. I knew. And then I bet you once this thing comes out, you're going to have everyone sort of switch and then start to shame the shamers. How dare all these people say bad things that I was doing two weeks ago?
Yep. We'll see. Again, I mean, there's always going to be people who are just going to dig in and they're going to hate watch it and stuff. And that's fine.
But at least they're watching it.
Well, exactly.
Bought that ticket. That's on you.
To another movie.
Do you have a suit already picked out for the premiere? Like, how?
Have I got a new outfit?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
What is Paul Feig wearing on the red carpet?
And what am I wearing?
It better be Slimer green everything.
Yeah, exactly. I do have a very spicy three-piece new one that
awesome.
I had made for this. So.
I would think even like a Ghostbusters tie, like
Well, I do have my one of my producers and my line producer made me Ghostbusters cufflinks.
Wow.
It's the hood ornament from the movie,
okay,
which is like it's in one of the trailers.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The scared ghost.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I have cufflinks with him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's funny. I thought talk about style. I thought of you the other day because on Amazon they have suit pajamas. And
I gotta get some of those.
I knew that laugh was gonna be followed
real
by
suits.
Finally. and that's the thing. Like it's pajamas are they're silk. Pajamas, but then they look like a suit.
See, that's right.
I thought Paul Feig, if anyone were to ever need a pair of these,
there
it's
you go.
Paul Feig.
The greatest fake suit I've ever seen is there's a wetsuit, a surfing wetsuit that looks like one of the Kill Bill assassins or whatever. It's a full-on black suit with a white tie, and it looks so awesome.
That's
if I ever surfed, which I won't, I would wear that.
A few more minutes. So we're going to do an L.A. Is that where do they know where?
Now we're in L.A. premiere.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
We were going to be New York, but now that they closed the Ziegfeld, which was a giant
they did?
Theater. Yeah,
that's where the heat was.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It was a great theater.
But I as much as I'd love to do a premiere in New York, I actually think it's good because here we can get much bigger theaters. And I don't know. We'll see. But I love New York. We'll be in New York a bunch promoting this, too.
Yeah. Then and this film's going to be such an event. I don't think it really matters where you put the
– Right.
You could put the premiere in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and a bunch of people would come out.
That's right. Well, I really am hung up on – there's this new thing. I don't know if you've heard of it or not, called Atmos, which is that's the new – sound system in movie theaters. That's the future, which is
nice.
It's so many more speakers, and the entire ceiling has them so that sounds can go over your head, can come around the back, can come all, kind of go from side to side.
Ghosts flying around, that would be so great.
Yeah, so we're mixing an Atmos, and it's so cool. So,
wait, so theaters already have this?
Yeah, there's a bunch that already have it.
Oh, that's
not
amazing.
Everywhere, but if you try to find the Atmos, you'll get a cool experience.
I feel like sound, too, on a movie like this is...
Oh, it's everything.
Right?
It's every sound and music is everything. Like, when you watch it without it, you're kind of like, oh, this movie's kind of dragging. And the minute it's in, it's like, oh, my God. Really?
Yeah, the sound. And I'm fascinated by it because some person, there's not some standard of what a ghost talking, flying, doing anything sounds like. You have to create those – sounds, whoever that sound person is, from nothing.
Yeah. Well, I have an amazing sound team. Amazing sound team. Who actually have done, they did The Heat and Spy with me.
Wow. Yeah.
And no, but it is fun because you go like, let's make this sound more like this because, there's no like.
Yeah, there's no template of what, like, it's not every ghost is going to be like, ooh. Yeah. Like that's not going to be the standard.
It'd be great if that's all it was. But it's just Adam.
It's just Adam.
Clearly me, and then I start selling Hyundais.
Yeah. Well, my favorite thing when I was a kid was Disney put out a Haunted Mansion album.
Yeah.
What? Lots of just scary sounds like that.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, it was just something you would play at Halloween, and then just to have it like sort of in your background as people walk through your house.
And there was a time when people were genuinely spooked by those. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah. When we were kids, we were always putting on like The Little Rascals, like some kind of show in our garage to try to make money. Oh yeah, I remember once we said it was going to be a haunted house, but all we did is just brought a bunch of little kids in, charged them a dime, and turned the lights off and just played that album for half an hour. And all these kids were like, ah, get me out of here.
Man, you know what? I do the same thing, only I just play a Nickelback album, and they're just terrified.
They go running?
Yeah, they're just like, oh, God! This reminds me to kill myself.
Well, they're not coming on the podcast.
Yeah, good boy. Yeah. Well done,
it's well, all in good fun, Nickelback. Bridge burner. Yeah.
So you did a lot of shows. That was like your early theater stuff,
that's
huh?
It's all we did. I mean, I was a magician, so I did a lot of shows at like retirement homes and stuff, but then we put tons of stuff on in our garage. We did a dance school once. We did constantly did haunted houses, do shows. It was ridiculous. Yeah.
Were you directing these or were you just acting and stuff?
Well, we were producing, directing, acting. And we did it all.
I was also the best boy grip.
Neither. One of the greatest things we ever did though is I decided to do a sale. But my dad owned an Army surplus store, and so I raided the garbage because, like, you know, when you buy cowboy hats, like, they're held, you know, they put them on in these kind of, like, cardboard separators.
Yeah.
They kind of are shaped like a hat, so I would just decorate those and sell them as hats. And then we just made a bunch of treasure maps, and we sold them that were completely fake. And I remember some dad, like, storming back with his kid, like, hey, you sold my kid this thing for a quarter, and he went all around the neighborhood to where that said the treasure was, and there was nothing there. Buyer beware.
It was just a pile of shit. Yeah. Did you know that shit was there?
So the kid bought a treasure map from another kid in the neighborhood, and
the dad came back.
The dad was mad.
And you thought, like, well, something's amiss.
Yeah.
We went looking for that treasure, and turns out, okay. Yeah.
How desperate was that dad? He was just like, this is finally going to turn it around, a treasure map. So he was not only pissed that you duped his kid.
That's hysterical. Give me that map. Yeah. This is mine.
He was the guy from the fairy tale that's like, wait, you sold the cow for magic beans? Awesome.
Well, that's how we bought our house. It turned out.
Magic beans?
Exactly. That's right. Magic beans. When we bought our house, some guy who I think he used to work in intelligence or something. The whole house was wired with weird wires and intercoms and stuff. But we were tearing up the carpet. And we found a safe that was mounted into the floor.
Oh shit!
And we couldn't open it. It was like, what's in it? My God, it must have everything. So we like went around and got somebody to open it, and there was nothing in it. It's a terrible story. I'm so sure there'd either be like state secrets in it, or gold bullion,
or Action Comics number 18, first appearance.
I know, or Honus Wagner card,
Yeah, exactly.
We all want to find that treasure, or just like a map going for whatever. It's it's never going to not be exciting. Well, this has been amazing.
Oh my God, thanks.
Thank you for making time.
Thank you for making the trek over. Oh, and, I love talking to you.
So all female cast of Ghostbusters, all I'm saying is, when's the all dwarf cast of Hoosiers? Can we make that movie?
You weren't supposed to announce it.
Well, at least I have an idea for maybe a new trailer. Like, if you really want to, it's Brad on a funky duck, shirtless, holding swords, which he owns, going.
That might be our new trailer.
I'd see that movie. But Paul, thank you so much. And
July 15th.
Yeah, July 15th.
July 15th in theaters. Yeah,
go. watch it, enjoy it, and get a big bag of popcorn, because this is this is a popcorn film.
It's a popcorn film. You're just going to have fun with the four of the funniest people I know, and then an amazing supporting cast of the funniest people.
And they made it that good despite of Slimer. And I think that's
overcame. I didn't see it.
Thanks,
Brad. Did those?
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, you guys. Cheers.
So that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know.
But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that
Brad Williams and Adam Ray can help you get
Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or AboutLastNightPodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamy Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.